overwhelming fatigue, where you just suddenly in the early part of the afternoon or even during the morning feel like you cannot hold your head up. And Krishna talked about that, Gopi Krishna, where the head just feels like it is so heavy you cannot support it, and you just go to sleep. And I think in my early years with this experience, that was part of my experience, because the body is being restructured and it just doesn't know what, how to hold or deal with all of the energy that's happening. And then, of course, intensified or diminished sexual desire. If the energy comes all the way up into the throat, third eye, and crown, usually desire is diminished because you're so focused on the inner experience with it having risen that high up. If it only comes up part ways, oftentimes it really feels very stimulating and desire is increased. So you can have one or the other or both of those experiences happening. Racing pulse or heart, pain in the chest or tingling vibration in the chest. Sometimes people think they're having a panic attack or that they're having a heart attack. And what they're really having is a heart opening or awakening, where the heart is being expanded through the movement of this energy. I had the experience a few years ago in Clovis of sitting on my couch one night reading, and I suddenly felt like my back was getting thick. I thought, that's the weirdest feeling. What is that? And I felt back there, and it felt really spongy and strange, and it was hot. So I got up and went in the bathroom, took off my shirt, and looked in the mirror. And my entire back, from just at the seventh cervical all the way down to the first big lumbar, had swollen up about a half an inch, bright red, like I had a massive hive happening. I don't know how else to describe it. And I looked at that, and I became frightened. And my intellect said, oh, you're going to really start itching here anytime soon. This is going to be really miserable. But I kind of just stayed with it and talked to myself that something else was happening. And I soon realized that somehow it was a manifestation of that energy. And indeed, the next day it was completely gone. But I think if I had panicked, you know, and I thought about hives itching and all that, I probably would have been a real wreck. So that's an unusual manifestation that I haven't heard of elsewhere, but it did happen to me. Lots of people have digestive problems, sensitive stomach, or speeded up elimination. I've never had any problems with digestion or stomach. But you drink a lot of water because of the heat generated by the experience, and it detoxifies. And of course, that means you're running to the bathroom a lot, which is probably a good thing. I think stomach problems probably happen to a person who's in great fear and has closed down all the lower centers or contracted them quite a bit. And maybe all of the abdomen is quite tight as well. Aches and numbness, pain in the extremities, your joints, especially the wrists and the elbows, I've noticed can really ache when you're in the midst of this. You have, you know, minor chakras everywhere that you bend on the body. All the major ones are up the spine. So I think the energy goes into all of these areas and continues to detoxify and shift things. The emotional body can go through great mood shifts, lots of outbursts, grief, fear, depression, or paranoia. It's really good when you're in the midst of this if you can at all stay away from crowds to do it, because it really intensifies your experience. And your boundaries are so diffused, you often pick up other people's stuff. So it's hard then to know what's yours and what is someone else's. Lights, movement, confusion of sounds can be very overwhelming. I found that I couldn't drive very well at all in the midst of this. At night, I would see great washes of color instead of just the stoplights, red, green, yellow, you know. They would wash out, and it was very distracting, and taillights on cars and things like that. So lots of hypersensitivity to color and sound. And then I've mentioned the things that Muktananda mentioned as far as the inner things you might hear. And then the vocalizations, another one I've not experienced, thank you very much. But some people are said to chirp or bark or make all kinds of different vocalizations, which I think means that this center, the throat, is being really expanded and cleared, opened, awakened. Yeah, and I've never been around anybody when they did this either, thank goodness. But that's in the literature. What I have had for myself is when the energy sits here, I want to sing. I want to sing and get my voice moving in that way. So I'll usually put on music, or I will just sing spontaneously. It seems to move that through. Oh, lots of the rest of these, gosh, short-term memory disappears, really true. I could be cooking and I've just added something and I have no clue what it was I put in there. Even though the recipe's right in front of me, I don't remember what I just did. Again, because the focus often is in other dimensions. I may be in a process of being instructed or of receiving information, but I still have to cook, you know, so it's hard to do both at once. Periods of tremendous joy, love, peace, and compassion, an understanding of all life and of the earth's kingdoms. You may actually hear the animals speak. This is very common. After the birth of my son, I clearly remember being outside in the backyard. We lived in Shell Beach at the time, and I was showing him something in the garden. We were digging around or something, and a black wasp flew in and began to dig. And I knew that she was making a nest for her babies. And there was no separation between us. She was just another mother, just like myself. I heard her speak about the importance of not getting too close to her, not disturbing what she was doing. The sides were very fragile of the tunnel she was building. It was just amazing. And many experiences like that during those first months after birth. Psychic experiences are a very common offshoot. Out-of-body states, past life memory coming up. Often what happens is this energy will ask you to do a life review, and as it moves through the different centers, it will bring up the memories that are seated in each of the different chakras. So you might go through childhood experiences or a recent experience with a friend. You have so much insight that healing and just complete acceptance and a complete shift of the experience as it has been in your memory can occur naturally and spontaneously. One time I worked at a medical clinic in Clovis, and there was some very unethical things happening. The bottom line was they were going to close the clinic in December without telling the employees that I knew this was coming. I just knew it. And most of the employees there were single mothers. They needed their job. And here it was December, you know, right before Christmas. It would be terrible. So I began to confront a couple of the doctors on this issue, and they all denied it. And eventually, two of us kind of really had it out. I really laid on the line what I knew was happening and how unethical I thought it was that they were not informing these other women who were the sole support for their little families. And it was Christmas time was approaching. And I thought, gosh, why do I feel so intense about this? Why am I doing this? And I went home one afternoon, and I felt this heat begin to come up, and I agreed to go and just listen and see what would happen. And a whole other life appeared before my eyes, and in it, it was an Aztec time, and in it were these same men that I was dealing with now, only at that time, I lost my life to them, and the one in particular who held a lot of power as a priest. And it's a whole long story, but it gave me so much insight into why I felt so strongly about speaking to them very clearly this time and helping others if I could. I didn't do that in the other experience, but this time I could do it differently. And I went back and felt strengthened, informed the employees, gave my notice of resignation, and was out of there in 2 weeks. And I could hardly believe that all of that had unfolded, you know. And that was insight granted to me, I believe, because of this energetic experience that can happen. So that's another way that it can serve and expand you. One of the best side effects is enhanced creativity. All of the geniuses of our world, the great artists, the great musicians, Gopi Krishna was a prolific writer and poet after he got peaceful with his experience, as was Aurobindo in the East, and so many of the Eastern masters and gurus. And for myself, I think it causes me to be able to speak. When I was young, I was painfully shy. I mean, excruciatingly so. I was happiest out of doors. Very hard to go to family reunions and be with people. Even one-on-one was kind of hard for me as a kid. And I'm just not bothered by that, and I don't think that change would have happened as rapidly in me if I hadn't been aware of the movement of this energy. So you do have enlightenment experiences and the direct knowing, that transcendental awareness of the unity of all life, that everything is your brother or your sister, your mother, your father, your aunt or your uncle, your grandfather or your grandmother. All of those experiences are part of Kundalini. When it comes up. Good. I hope it's... Do you recognize any of these for yourselves in your life? Okay. Then I just... Let's see, where are we time-wise? I want to mention there are about 8 qualities. There's probably more than this, but I've kind of rounded it up into 8, which really let you know that you're in the midst of this experience. And the first one is, if you have a sense that you have a mission, a purpose, a calling in life, when you begin to suddenly ask the questions in your life again about, isn't there something more that I should be doing in my life? Don't I have a purpose here? Isn't there something I can do to help others or to help all life on this planet? Questions like that. The vivid sensation of light is probably the best marker for the experience because it affects the physical eyes, it opens the inner sight, and everything begins to have that brilliance around it. Gopi Krishna said that he could see it around his own body, and sometimes he saw it as a brilliant light, sometimes as a red glow when he was in that the midst of that heat. The whole of life seems to have an extra shimmer. When I've been in this process and I've looked at myself in the mirror, my eyes have seemed so brilliant that it kind of startles me. And my kids have said to me how my face looks different. They see some kind of a light that's there that they don't normally see. The third one is cosmic consciousness or understanding of the unity of all life, transcending that separateness of self-consciousness. Move beyond that. Cosmic consciousness, or that knowledge of the oneness of all, that unity. And then, of course, that feeling of joy, or that rapturous feeling that all of us have when we first fall in love. It's similar to that, but in a much expanded way, because everything gives you joy. All the plants, all the animals, your friends. You just have such an affection for everything, all of creation. And then a constant awareness of a connection to the divine. You know you are there. You know you are part of that. Or an urge to know the divine, and to be with that all the time. It's like that constant talking to God, or that prayerful state that some of the saints speak about when you read the lives of the saints. And a feeling that you really are unified with that infinite source of knowledge. You could have access, if you chose, to all knowledge and wisdom. You have that sense. And this I really love, and it is so true, that innocent sense of wonder and awe that you see in little children. You have that when you're in the midst of this experience. And you have a sense of worthiness. You don't have a lack of self-esteem when you're in the midst of this process. You know that you are worthy, that you are the beloved, you know, and you are one with the beloved. You just know that. Okay. We've talked a little bit, I think, about what Kundalini does to you or for you, but I really want to make a point of saying that it strengthens and purifies the body. You have a stronger physical body because of this experience. Doesn't diminish or weaken you. It strengthens you. You stop being ill. Your own vibration moves to a level where illness is not. And for myself, last major illness I had was 14 years ago. And I would say the only thing I deal with occasionally now is allergies. And finally, having gotten some good Chinese herbs, I don't have that anymore either. So I haven't had a cold or... really the experience of flu, general malaise sometimes, I think, but nothing overt like that that lasts for a couple of weeks or anything like that in a long, long time. So you can enter really a state where even if you're in the midst of people who are sneezing and coughing, you know you're not going to have that. It's not part of your experience. It really makes your cellular life so healthy. The best thing I can say. It's hard to put this into words. Oh, thanks. You're also going to notice that you want to make the changes that come up when you're in the midst of this experience. You'll have a feeling of, I need to let go of a certain job or certain people or the place I'm living in or the city that I live. You will be naturally drawn to do what is appropriate for you in your life. It really makes your life much, much richer. And I mentioned about writing poetry or music or leadership. You don't think about George Washington too much as being a man who maybe had this experience, but I'm certain that he did. Some of the visions that are recorded that he experienced and the dreams, his just incredible belief that this country was sacred land and something wondrous was going to come forward. People like our inventors, anyone who brings information from the heaven worlds into this dimension and really gets it to work for us, for the good of all, is someone who has had this Kundalini experience and can give us the benefit. The heaven worlds, I always say, because there are so many levels, you know. My easy way of thinking of it. So after having said all that, I want to share with you a few stories about people that have really had this experience beyond what I've already done. I think the thing that really saved my life really was reading the lives of the saints, because these people levitated, they saw visions, they smelled unusual things, they heard things that no one else heard. Some of them could only survive on the consecrated host and the wine. That was all they ate. Some of them manifested the stigmata, wherein they lost copious amounts of blood every few days, every Friday, and the wounds would barely begin to close, and then it would start over again. And they would be in the midst of an ecstatic trance, you know, during that. And one of the people that comes to mind is a favorite saint of mine, Saint Teresa of Lisieux. She was someone I read about when I was probably 9 or 10 years old, and gosh, I used to talk to her a lot when I would see and hear things, and nobody else did. It just helped me stay sane. When she was about 10, that's when I believe her experience has never been labeled Kundalini, but it's too similar to all the other things that I've heard about worldwide, so I'm certain this is what she had. When she was 10, she had a strange tremoring that went all over her body, kriyas. And I think that was the energy awakening and really moving through her body. She didn't have a fever with this, and she did have a physician that kind of checked on her through this experience. Once that tremoring stopped, it never came back. But a couple of weeks later, she began to have what was labeled by her doctor as hallucinations. She saw beings, she saw visions, she heard things and smelled things that no one else did. And on top of all that, she began to do tumbling and gymnastic-like moves. They didn't have gymnastics, I guess, in the last century, which is when she lived. She died probably in the 1890s. And she would be flipping or spinning or just doing these very unusual gymnastic movements. One that's recorded that her parents witnessed is when she was sitting on her knees praying, and she spontaneously flipped from her knees onto the crown of her head and without support of her arms and extended her legs up doing a handstand. You know, that to most people is impossible unless you've been practicing that. But it's that kind of movement that the energy sometimes requires of the body for some reason. In her case, she did a lot of this for quite a while. And luckily, she had a doctor who did not label her a hysteric, which was happening to women in that time, you know, in the last century. And sad to say, the cure for hysteria was lobotomy. And there are many, many recorded cases of that having been done to women. It's just heartbreaking. I was aghast when it just made me ill when I first heard about that. All of this happened to her for probably 2 or 3 months. The interesting thing that she said is that she never lost awareness. She knew what was going on, but because she had such a strong prayer life, she trusted it implicitly and never questioned her experience. And then, of course, she grew up to be the saint who did little things well. She never believed she was capable of greatness, but, you know, when she did her handwork, every stitch was a prayer, that sort of thing. She lived just an incredibly blessed life and helped a lot of other people, and many people saw her after her death. And she is the saint of whom it is said that the roses bloomed in the snow in France after she died, and that roses fell from heaven. I don't know if that's truth or a legend, but it's lovely to think about. Good story. Hildegard of Bingen, I think, is another good example. This woman was a Renaissance woman. She did everything. She had a great scientific mind. She could be a mathematician if needed. She was a great educator. She was a poet, and the incredible mandala work that she did, all indicative of an arisen kundalini. Wonderful, amazing woman, I think. Saint Cecilia is another saint that's a favorite of mine. She's one of those that was known in her own home to levitate up the stairs, and she loved music, so she would play the piano, and her parents recorded the fact that they saw flocks of angels, if angels are flocks, all around when she was playing. And in her latter life, she is one who survived on just little to no food, and then the consecrated host water or wine. It's a very pious woman. Let's see. Oh, one of the things I wanted to mention, you saw The Gods Must Be Crazy, that funny great film that was out years ago about the little, the clicking tribe, the click and gong people. They have a process in their tribe where they say that they become more of themselves. And what they do is dance and dance and spin until they begin to feel this energy of heat and a great sound in their ears roaring up. And they say that when that happens, then they stop the movement, and they can prophesy, and they can heal one another, and they're in their higher state as tribes people. And there are many other stories like that around the world. If you know about Padre Pio, another favorite of mine, he's one who had the stigmata, and a very awakened person who could, if someone sent him a letter in another language, his own guardian angel could translate it for him, and he could send healing information back, that kind of thing. He was known to levitate up into the trees, to the top of the roof in the church, and just his story is phenomenal. If you ever get a chance, I encourage you to read about him. A very great healer, very holy man. And then finally, there's another young woman that I don't believe is a saint yet. She's known as Blessed Margaret, and she lived in Italy. Was born into a very wealthy family, but unfortunately she was born blind, and she had one leg shorter than the other and a hump on her back, which is a very severe form of scoliosis. But in the time that she lived, which was the 13th century, they didn't know what that was. Her family literally locked her away in a separate little stone building with a locked door and a barred window. And her only contact with the world was the local priest, who educated her and told her about keeping her heart open. So she always prayed for her parents and loved them. They never saw or interacted with her very rarely. One day her parents heard about some kind of a healer in some town in Italy, and they took her there expecting that she would be healed of her physical maladies. But when she was praying, what you were supposed to do was go in the front or be in the presence of this holy person and pray for healing. She didn't pray for her healing. She prayed for everyone else there, and she prayed for her parents that they would always be safe and blessed. And many of the people who were there that day were healed. Margaret was not. And when her parents came back to find her and saw her in that condition, they left her there. They deserted her and went back home. And she was left, a pauper on the streets. She was adopted by the poor people. She instructed them and became beloved of them. And many unusual healings happened while she was living with them. Eventually, she went into a convent and was, of course, beloved of all the people there. And when she died, the poor people came in droves to the church, and they wanted to bury her out at some other big fancy place. And they claimed her as their own and convinced the priest to bury her in the little local church. Well, while her body was lying in state, a mother took a child who had been born with very similar bodily deformities to Margaret's and laid the child, who was about 10 or 12 years old, next to Margaret's dead body. And it is recorded that Margaret's, her arms were kind of like this, or holding her rosary, and that one of her arms came up and rested on the other the child next to her. And the child was also not able to speak, born without a vocal box properly formed. And the child began to cry and speak, and then the arm kind of replaced itself, and when she got up, she was no longer deformed. She was completely healed, and she also could speak normally. And that's a miracle that is attested to in the literature of that country. It is recorded there. She is one of the saints who has an incorruptible body. She's been dead at least 600 years, and her body still lies in a glass case in the church behind the altar. And while it doesn't look like you or I, it's definitely a body, you know. It's quite amazing after that amount of time. So there are many, many stories I could tell you. Those are just a few. And I think the literature that talks about Kundalini as being a fearful force, a frightening force, something that can destroy or hurt you or send you to madness, is the old paradigm. I think the paradigm that we're living in now is that this is a natural evolutionary process. And the person that I know that spoke the most strongly about that, besides Gopi Krishna, is Sri Aurobindo. And I highly recommend his work if you want to know more. It's just an amazing life himself. Okay, so now I want to talk a little bit on how, and I think I probably have covered this pretty much already, how in your own life you can naturally ask this energy to move forward or to move up. The first one is, if you are a devotional person, if you look at the lives of the saints, all of them had a very sacred time daily in their life. They had their prayer time. They had their devotions. And many of them during that would naturally go into an ecstatic visionary state. The children in Garibaldi are, I believe, having Kundalini experience. When you see them with their necks bent back and walking backwards without falling over the cobblestone, while they're gazing at their inner vision, which is that of the mother of Mary, and getting her teachings, whatever she is telling them. These children have had this experience. It's the longest recorded one. For 10, maybe 15 years now. They're all grown up. They're not children anymore. Some of them are even married. But some of them still have that experience on a daily or weekly basis. Meditation is the best known form, other than devotional prayer, of awakening the energy. And it's just that daily practice of meditation. And for myself, I'm not a great meditator. I am really good at distracting myself. So I might be hearing my inner teacher say, it's time to go and sit. And I will go in the garden, or I will go read, or I will write, or I'll get on the computer. So I'm a very recalcitrant meditator. And yet, when I sit for any period of time, the experience deepens very rapidly. A few days in a row or several weeks, it just moves very quickly. I do have a real active inner prayer life, and I think that that set me up for when I do become very quiet, the energy can move very easily and effortlessly. Selfless service, someone like Mother Teresa, any of the other great teachers and workers in the world that you can think of, when their whole life is devoted to that, it often brings such an inner awareness that the energy begins to move spontaneously. And finally, and this is the one that's been the biggest in my life, intellectual inquiry. When you are so focused on getting the answer to something, like it's like for me, Getting pieces of the puzzle that give me the truth. When I get an inner urging to investigate something, and then I do it to the extent that everything else is put aside.